I'm as confused as you are, folks. I don't know what's going on either. I don't know what this song is or where the crew found it. I think I hate it. God hates the tips. Oh, it's Trevor Moore. From Whitest Kids You Know. Yeah, it's a weird thing, I'll tell you that right now. It's a very weird thing. It's one of those things that just never really, people just never really questioned. It's just what you do. As soon as you question it, you realize there's no reason, actually. It's actually a terrible thing. It's actually literally genital mutilation, and it leaves a permanent mark on your brain, actually. Crazy stuff. All right, we can move on. I could talk more about that topic. It's a weird practice, I gotta say. Anyway, we'll move on now. But look up the UK royal family. Look up how the UK royal family gets circumcised. That's an interesting wrinkle in the story, if you can put it that way. Welcome back, folks. That was a weird song. Totally threw me off. I forgot what I was going to do. Okay, let's go to clip number 9 here. This is the fascist history of Ben Gavir. This is who Ben Gavir is. He is the face of Israel. And by the way, I think the solution's anti-Semitism. I do. I think the solution to these problems is outspoken anti-Semitism, and I'll explain why. Because when Ben Gavir does this, it's not supposed to reflect on the Jewish people. But what if it did? Would he be as likely to do it? What if we blamed all Jews for the actions of Israel? Would they be incentivized to not be completely insane now? I don't know, but I think anti-Semitism might just save the Jews. It just might. Because what the only solution to this really is the Jewish community themselves, stepping up and getting Ben Gavir to stop, or getting Netanyahu to stop, or getting Jonathan Greenblatt to stop, or getting Ben Shapiro to stop, or getting Rabbi Shmuley to stop. But because, there's this unwillingness to blame all of them for the actions of one, which ostensibly is a good thing. You would think it's a good thing, but here I'm thinking we're in this situation because you've got Jews acting completely terribly and other Jews defending them. And then we're not supposed to, think it represents all of them. What if it did, though? But what if it did? Would they not then be incentivized to, pressure these people? Hey, you got to stop because it's making all of us look bad. Because it is making all of you look bad. So that's I'm kind of half joking, but I don't know. I think it's worth a shot. I mean, the way things are going now, it ain't looking good. So, what are we going to do? Mess it up? What are we going to do? Make things worse? What if anti-Semitism is the solution? I don't know. I think it's worth a try. I think it's one of these creative solutions I've come up with that just might work. It's just crazy enough to work. So maybe we'll try that from now on. This is from Double Down News, The Fascist History of Ben Gavir. Clip number 9. Hello?
Ben Gavir of Jewish Power, previously convicted in Israel of incitement to racism and supporting a terrorist organization. Ben Gavir lives in an illegal settlement in Hebron. Ben Gavir's mentor, Rabbi Meir Kahani, established the Kach movement.
This is our country. It is not theirs. I want the Arabs out.
They must go.
He was committed to the use of specifically Jewish violence to effect such changes.
If I were the Minister of Defense, there wouldn't be one Arab left here.
Are you encouraging your people to go out on the streets and to attack Arabs as has happened in...
I call upon the Jews to do anything imaginable and anything possible which will encourage the Arabs to get out of this country.
Does that mean attacking?
Anything possible.
I want them out alive, and if not alive, dead.
Kahani's views were so extreme that the US classified Kach as a terrorist organization in 1997. And Kahani was the inspiration for Baruch Goldstein, another settler from the Hebron settlements who murdered over 20 innocent Palestinians in cold blood.
Goldstein's portrait still hangs in Hebron on the wall of Itamar Ben-Gvir.
In 1993, Benjamin Netanyahu became leader of Likud. As Likud leader, Benjamin Netanyahu demonized the then Israeli Prime Minister and Labour Party leader Yitzhak Rabin for signing the Oslo Peace Accords. In 1995, Ben-Gvir, the Minister for National Security, responsible for the police today, appeared on television brandishing an ornament stolen from Rabin's car and proudly declared, "We got to his car, we'll get to him too." A few weeks later, Rabin was assassinated. The death of Rabin led to the death of the peace process. In 1996, Benjamin Netanyahu became Israeli Prime Minister for the first time. And what he set about doing was the creation of a whole new generation of far-right extremist political leaders in Israel. Despite constant scandals, Netanyahu has been re-elected Prime Minister on 6 occasions. Given the importance of global conversations about peace, about racism, there has never been a time when independent media is more important. So watch Double Down News and support Double Down News on Patreon.
There you go. Little history lesson for you about Ben-Gvir. The Baruch Goldstein is one of these stories where, yeah, the guy killed, you know, 20 Palestinians, and they celebrate this guy every year. Ben-Gvir's got a picture hanging up, and when he's asked what he would tell his son about the man in the picture, he'd say he's a hero, he's a righteous man. He's a mass murderer, murdered innocent people, and to Ben-Gvir, that makes him righteous. This guy's the strongest Jew in the state of Israel and the terrorist. Hey, we'll take your word for it, Shmuley. So again, you know, this is just who we're dealing with. And, you know, at the end of that segment, the guy's like, you know, as much as we talk about peace and all this sort of stuff, just understand they don't care. They don't care. They don't want peace. They're not embarrassed by this. They're not shamed by this. You know, they didn't try to cover it up. They're doing this on purpose. It's a psychological operation. Ben-Gvir's policy goals going to extremes. Even Europe's far right won't touch. We got to come up with a new term for the Israeli far right, because they're not even in the same universe. The gulf of difference between American right wingers that are just like, "Stop destroying my country. I want to be able to afford a house," and they're just like extreme right winger. Meanwhile, extreme right wingers in Israel are just like, "We've got to kill all of the Arabs, kill them all, kill the babies." It's like they're not both right wing, right? One of them is a terrorist Zionist, and the other one is just a normal human being. Was normal for a long time. But I really hate the way it's like, "But that's the Israeli right wing." It's like, kinda. The Israeli right wing is also the ones who will open up the border in Europe to Muslims. Anyway. It's not right or left. It's Israel versus everybody. That is the only division here. We're going to move on. We'll get to American politics here, since it ain't going well. But we could continue with Israel if we wanted. But no, we'll move on. But we could, we will. Let's continue for a little bit. Let's go to clip 12 here. As Israel appears to be building a new wall inside Gaza, satellite images show they are in fact annexing a large portion of the Gaza Strip. And once again, total abject violation of all of the agreements that they've signed with Donald Trump in America. It's supposed to be ceasefire in Gaza. There's never been a ceasefire. They're still killing dozens of people a day on average, or at least more than normally die. They're still obviously blocking humanitarian aid, and they're taking it over, just like was always the intention. And just remember, October 7th was a total, absolute false flag. They allowed it to happen because they wanted this. It was Israeli gunships. It was Israeli helicopters that murdered people in Nova. It's not even a question. We literally have the video of it. So Israel kills its own people, uses that as an excuse to wage war in Gaza. And remember, in that video that we just saw, you know, Ben-Gvir was a part of this assassination plot, apparently, to kill, you know, an Israeli prime minister. It, you know, it's not like, you know, they don't have enemies within as well. But Ben-Gvir, Netanyahu, Smotrich, like, these are the most extreme religious fanatic terrorists, and they're the ones in charge of Israel right now, and they have the backing of the Israeli people. And it wasn't a bunch of Likud politicians that were the one banging on the prison demanding that the guards be allowed to rape the prisoners, right? That was just your average Israeli citizen. It's a cooperation. The Israeli citizens act outrageous. They commit insane crimes, and then the politicians cover it up for them. And then their agents in our countries prevent any international outrage from reaching the point of action. It's a very convenient setup they have. So let's go ahead and go to clip 12 here. This is the flagrant violation of the Gaza agreement as they are annexing the portion they're supposed to leave alone. Let's watch.
Israel appears to be building a new wall in Gaza. Satellite images analyzed by ABC News show deep trenches being dug along the yellow line, which was meant to be the temporary division established at the ceasefire in January between Hamas-controlled Gaza and IDF forces. Israel has pushed the line westward over the last few months and says it now controls 60% of the strip. Under the terms of the ceasefire, Hamas was meant to disarm and the IDF withdraw, but neither has happened. And now 2.1 million Palestinians live in an area less than half the size of what it was before the October 7th attack. With infrastructure demolished, hundreds of thousands are still living in tents and disease is spreading. ABC News has counted 9 military outposts along the line, which has become a kill zone for Palestinians over the last few months. The UN says more than 200 people, including dozens of women and children, have been killed close to it. Israel says IDF troops are deployed in accordance with the ceasefire agreement. They say there are no IDF military posts beyond the yellow line, and they're working to visibly mark the location of the line to prevent harm to civilians.
So there you go. Again, who's going to stop them? Who's going to stop them? We have the ability to stop them, but we won't. So who else? Let's go down to clip number 13. This was an Israeli settler attack yesterday on the Palestinians in the West Bank. We can go ahead and go to 13 now. There's a Palestinian standing on his own property, and there's the gang of settlers with the bats savagely beating him. In January 2026 alone, more than 200 attacks by Israeli settler militias against Palestinians were documented in the South Hebron Hills. And it's only increased since then. I mean, all throughout February and April, they increased even more. So 200 in January, probably at least 300 in the following months. And of course, the settlers know that they can attack with total fearlessness, because if there's any response, any attempt to defend themselves, then the IDF rolls in. And or the Israeli police show up at the door the next day to haul you away and throw you in prison because the settlers claim that you attacked them. So This is who we're defending to the destruction of our country. And importantly, the destruction of the Republican Party, first and foremost and above everything. Obviously, the two biggest negatives of Trump's current administration are Epstein and the Iran war, both directly attributable to Israeli influence here in America. And the result of this, has been an absolute collapse in the support for Donald Trump and the Republican Party, including the one demographic that he could always count on, white, no college degree Americans. He now has a negative approval rating at 46% with the disapproval rating at 54% for white Americans with no college degree, which was the base of his base, right? And there's an interesting development here because today, Reuters.com has the story, Democrats release autopsy of 2024 election loss, but they reject the findings. They're rejecting the findings of their own investigation. Bowing to pressure from within its ranks, the Democrat National Committee released on Thursday a long-withheld autopsy of Kamala Harris's loss to Donald Trump in the 2024 presidential race, only to quickly disavow it. The report found the Democrats have ceded ground to Trump's Republicans through underfunding of state parties and, quote, a persistent inability or unwillingness to listen to all voters. Huh. That's just the Democrats, though, right? It's not like that's a problem the Republicans could also have. A persistent inability or unwillingness to listen to your voters. Gee, did you try calling them all anti-Semitic panicans? Have you tried doing that? Did that work? In statements accompanying the release, DNC Chairman Ken Martin said it does not meet my standards and won't meet your standards, but he said it was being published to restore trust in the party. The 192-page document includes a disclaimer on the top of every page stating that it reflects the views of the author, not the DNC. So it's just a little bit ironic, I find, that the Democrats release a report that's like, yeah, we lost 2024 badly because we refused to listen to the voters and basically just told them that they have to vote for us. You think the Republicans could get that message? Or are we going to have to go through an absolute bloodbath in 2026 and 2028 and wait until like 2030 before the report comes out that's like, yeah, you probably should have listened to your voters, actually. Actually, if you want to get voted on, the thing to do is to represent your voters. Thanks. Oh, okay. Thank you for that. So I just find it a little bit ironic that the Democrats lost 2024 for the exact reason that the Republicans are going to lose 2028. And we know it here early 2026, but nothing's being done to fix it because the people that are driving the Republican Party off a cliff are all Democrats. They're Israeli first Democrats. So why would they care if the Republican Party gets destroyed? They're getting what they want. How Trump's revenge tour against Republicans could cost the party in November. This is from Reuters. Trump purges dissenters, risking alienation of moderates and independents. Trump's actions could limit Republican lawmakers' freedom to break ranks before the midterms. Cassidy's post-defeat vote shows risk that ousted Republicans will oppose Trump's priorities. 16 months into a second presidency, Donald Trump may be as unpopular as he's ever been among the American electorate, but his grip on his core base of MAGA voters remains unshaken. I think that's false, but okay. The power was on full display over the last 2 weeks as Trump ousted a string of fellow Republicans he considered apostates for not showing him enough personal fealty. The president's revenge tour continued on Tuesday when a handpicked loyalist defeated U.S. Representative Thomas Massie, a frequent critic, in a Kentucky nomination contest. But Trump's success in purging the party of dissenters could also hurt its chances of retaining control in Congress in November midterm elections, some Republican strategists said. Trump's actions appear to be aimed at mobilizing his most diehard supporters rather than reaching out to independent or moderate Republican voters who will likely play a determinative role in the highly competitive races. As Republican candidates in those contests may feel pressure to tether themselves even more closely to Trump to avoid becoming the latest targets of his ire, even though it may cost them voters outside the Make America Great Again base. Anytime the party in power, the midterm elections face headwinds, the president should be looking to grow his coalition, said Jeff Grappone, a former advisor to several Republican senators. With the Iran war driving energy costs higher, Trump's approval rating was at 35, and in a Reuters poll that closed on Monday, reflecting growing concern about inflation and the cost of living. Yeah, but Trump responded to that by saying he doesn't care. We got a response from Trump about the inflation and the economic woes. It's that he literally doesn't ever think about it and doesn't care and thinks it's peanuts and says it's worth it and to shut up. So, you know, if you're concerned about the economy, just know Donald Trump does not care. Even a little bit. He's not even pretending to. But it's not just American, you know, the Republican Party that is suffering because of Donald Trump's endless subservient suicidal retardation in the name of Israel. Inside the unraveling of U.S. diplomacy under Trump, Donald Trump's threats, personal envoys, and hollowed out U.S. embassies are reshaping Washington's presence in the world. Allies from Europe to Asia are rewriting the rules of engagement, ignoring the president's rhetoric, and forging new diplomatic channels to manage a U.S. foreign policy driven increasingly by personalities, not institutions. And of course, you know, it doesn't even really get into the real fact of the matter, which is that, you know, we keep killing people we're supposed to be negotiating with and, you know, just abusing our allies endlessly for no particular reason other than Israel demands it. The Trump administration rejects the notion of a breakdown, saying the changes have strengthened U.S. diplomacy and streamlined decision making. The president has the right to determine who represents the American people and interest around the world, said Tommy Pigott, a State Department spokesman. The account of America's diplomatic upheaval is based on interviews with more than 50 senior diplomats, White House officials, and recently retired ambassadors, as well as dozens of foreign officials, diplomats, and lawmakers across Europe and Asia. As America's career diplomats are fired or sidelined, its allies are changing how they deal with Washington. Rather than rely on embassies or formal channels, foreign governments say they're rewiring their diplomacy around a small circle of people with direct access to the president, leaving many dependent on back channels to manage a superpower whose signals have grown erratic. So, yes, in other words, they got to go to Jared Kushner and Steve Witkoff if they want to get anything done. Can't go through the normal channels because Trump apparently completely ignores them, just like he does with our intelligence service, in favor of whoever his Israeli first diplomats are. And this is very troubling because Russia, at least, seems motivated and incentivized to sort of overcome this diplomatic confusion, to cut through the diplomatic static noise and send a very clear message, because the Trump administration seems like complete petulant babies is actually the reality. The fact is that, like, nothing gets done. No agreement can be made. You know, it really is Trump's personality that's been, you know, ceded to everybody. Where it's just like, yeah, they can lie with impunity. They can say one thing and then do another. And that's just smart, you know, smart business. That's deal making, you know, just like the great deal he made in China to bring in 500,000 Chinese students in exchange for forcing China to sell TikTok to Israel, you know, deal making. So 500,000 American kids will have their spots at universities taken by our greatest geopolitical rival. And then I'm sure many of them will get jobs here in America that would have gone to American students. So sure, they're disadvantaging directly at least 500,000 graduates every single year. But in exchange, Israel gets to censor our social media. So deal making, you know, like Trump does, the deals he makes. So apparently he's accruing this all to himself. And in order to cut through the fog, Russia is holding gigantic nuclear drills. Drills are intended to send a signal, says Russia, as they hold massive nuclear drills on land, sea, and air alongside Belarus. Russian President Vladimir Putin discussed the maneuvers in a video call with his Belarusian counterpart Lukashenko. Quote, the use of nuclear weapons is an extreme, exceptional measure for ensuring the national security of our state. Lukashenko earlier inspected Russian short-range nuclear-capable Iskander ballistic missiles at a military unit involved in the drills and declared, I dreamed about this machine a long time ago. The three-day drills that began on Tuesday come amid a surge in Ukrainian drone strikes, including on Moscow suburbs, that killed three people and damaged several buildings. So Ukraine is refusing to go quietly, refusing to allow the war to end, and Russia is now holding giant military drills with nuclear weapons, going, we're sending you a signal, America. Are you getting it? Do you understand yet? We will use nuclear weapons. Don't mess with us. We've been right.